The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show today. Brian Windhorst from ESPN, one of the best in the business, ESPN basketball insider. The Suns play at Cleveland tomorrow. And look, we've watched this train wreck for 8 years. And so a guy like Brian Windhorst at the top of his profession, of what he sees that's going on here with the Suns, his opinion of Robert Sarver, and what is the view inside the NBA offices of the Suns owner and the ownership group here, and what they've done to this once proud franchise. And are the Suns close also about LeBron? LeBron's going to be a free agent this summer. LeBron did take a meeting with the Suns last time, although I think Eric Bledsoe had a lot to do with that. So we'll talk with Brian Windhorst. He'll join us on a lot of things Suns related. Kevin Mawai is going to be with us today, 10:35. So Kevin Mawai, former great player in the National Football League, and Herm Edwards brought him in. He actually played for Herm. So now Kevin Mawai is part of the coaching staff at Arizona State with spring football well underway. Eric is out there today. So we'll have Kevin Mawai with us. And then Goody at the Movies, it is Thursday. That's a big day for movies. Get you ready for the weekend. Bill is going to be with us on Pacific Rim Rising, which this looks dreadful. This looks like a train wreck. Like, why would anybody sit through that? So that's all coming up on the show. Tara Pinkley is in today for Eric. Tara is getting her big shot in show business today, producing. And Jared Nielsen, of course, is our chairman of the board. Let's get you caught up what is on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. You need life insurance. You have not thought about life insurance. Protect what matters most with Sagicor Now. You log on, you get your free quote right there online. Sagicor Now, again, protect what matters most. We thank Sagicor and their support. All right, so there's some bad news today here in town, and that is Steven Souza. I think the big story of the day is Steven Souza being injured in last night's Diamondbacks game. Last night afterwards, Torrey Lovello said that there is no evidence of broken bones. Souza was holding his shoulder, dove for a ball. He went all out. It's spring training. You can't say, why is he doing that? That's what ball players do. That's what the best of the best do. They don't sit there and say, well, maybe I shouldn't dive for this ball because it's a meaningless game in March. Or it was just a reckless play on his part. What's he thinking? Of course you just let it fall in front of you. If it's a regular season game, you handle it differently. I don't think you can always just say automatically in your head, oh, this doesn't mean much, so I'm not going to go all out. So Steven Souza is the story of the day. Is he going to be out long-term for the Diamondbacks? And what would this mean for them? They have other options. They have a very large option, the last name of Tomas. I think you know him. I think you've seen him. I think you've seen the contract. So there's some options there. Zach Greinke threw on a side last night, or threw yesterday on a side, I should say, and he threw all right from what he said. So that's the story of the day, really, is what is going on with Souza and how severe is this injury and how much time is he going to miss? And if that breaks during the show, obviously we'll talk about it. Last night, I watched some of the Coyotes game against Buffalo, and once again, a very convincing victory. Once again, you look at the young players. Clayton Keller has now set the franchise record for most points in a season. I think I was at a breakfast this morning. That was one of the first topics this person brought up to me. This person's been around the sports scene for a long, long time. First item of business, how about the Coyotes? And Antti Raanta had 29 shots saved. They have the second best record over the last 6 weeks in the Western Conference. It's really something. 13-5-2. I will take this. I don't believe, you know, look, if it's a week or 2 weeks, then it's, well, the opposition really isn't taking them too serious. There's a long ways to go in this season. It's the dog days and all of that. I don't buy that in the NHL, first and foremost. It's a different, they take their sport, I think, the regular season, very serious. I think there's nights where I'll watch an NBA game and it's like, okay, this is the C best actor, C backup actor, and they're just going through the motions a lot of nights, especially in January and February. And about now is when the NBA really ramps up. But for the Coyotes, they skate again tonight at Carolina, and I'm very thrilled. I'm finding my way to watch them and to make sure that they're part of my consumption on a nightly basis when they play. That's not something I've done in the past. I'm pretty sure most of you have not done that either. There's a big story today in the NFL that in a roundabout way, I think, impacts the Arizona Cardinals in their pursuit of a quarterback. So the New York Giants this morning got rid of Jason Pierre-Paul. They traded him to Tampa Bay, of all places. They traded him to Tampa Bay. And so I'm just looking at the Buccaneers as they had Jason Pierre-Paul. They have JPP now. And here are the Giants that have said, all right, are we in this quarterback thing or not? Are we going to hang on to our pick? Are we going to trade out of the spot for the pick? They do it the day after Sam Darnold has his pro day workout. And by all accounts, Sam Darnold's pro day workout was terrific, that he is going to go to Cleveland. So do the Giants look at this and say, you know, we can change this roster up. Dave Gettleman, their new general manager, we can change this roster up. Let's get rid of some of the older weight. Maybe we hang on to this pick and maybe we get the replacement for Eli Manning, or maybe we move Eli Manning. And Eli Manning, it's like his brother. His brother was famous. And I've talked about this on the show, but if you've missed it, we've had backups to Peyton on the show before. Brock Cured's one of them. And it wasn't a piece of cake being his backup quarterback. It wasn't like he mentored him along. And Eli has said, I'm not here to help someone. I'm here to win games. All right, so is it finally time to move Eli on and the Giants stay and they take one of the quarterbacks at the top of the draft? Or are they simply getting more assets together? If they trade out of the number two slot, it gives them more picks. They trade back and now draft someone on the defensive side of the football. It's really interesting how this is playing out because it seems to me that we are going to see for the first time that I can recall in the history of the draft, quarterback one, quarterback two, quarterback three, quarterback four. We're going to see four quarterbacks go. And the Cardinals yesterday, they had everybody out there to watch Sam Darnold in the rain. Steve Keim was out there. Steve Wilks was out there. Mike McCoy, the offensive coordinator. Byron Leftwich, the quarterback coach. All four of them were out there yesterday to watch the workout of Sam Darnold. And so what does that mean for the Cardinals as they're going through their workouts and their boards and looking at the quarterback situation and how high will they go? We've talked about it on this show all week long about how the Cardinals, I think, are in a position that if they chose to do so, that they would move up in this draft and they'd have the capabilities of moving all the way up to the number two or the number one slot to go chase that quarterback and turn the franchise around. Inject some life, because I don't hear many people saying, wow, that Sam Bradford signing, that has been terrific. I don't hear many people saying, wow, we got Mike Glennon on board. Now it's all figured out. But if you look at the NFL and the trend that is going on in the NFL, and that trend is go get a young quarterback and surround him with a couple of others like they've done in Philadelphia and like I think Denver is trying to do, go that direction, put it all together, and you've got something to work with. It just feels like the Cardinals are sitting on something, because this is not a this is a franchise that's very PR savvy. Don't mistake yourself. This is a franchise that I think the last couple of years has been kind of, even with an 8-8 season and all the guys on injured reserve, 15 guys last season, they have not had the buzz that they once had. And I think this ownership group loves to be in the spotlight, loves to be on top of the heap in a very competitive sports market. And they're not going to do it with what they currently have at quarterback, in my humble opinion. You move all the way up, all of a sudden you're going to have fans all corners jumping on board with this team. So there's some NFL to get to. And the Sam Darnold workout, how does it impact the other teams behind him? It was Cleveland weather for him yesterday. The owner of the Browns was there. It was a cool shot of the owner of the Browns going up and sitting down in the bleachers on this practice field with the parents of Sam Darnold. It's very old school. It's like going to a high school game and just sitting there on the bleachers and hanging out. It's very, very cool. Of course, tonight is the Sweet 16, and Marvin Bagley is still out there. Marvin Bagley is still playing. He doesn't play till tomorrow night. Duke doesn't play till tomorrow. But DeAndre Ayton is not. And there's been this school of thought, and I don't buy into it at all, but there's been this school of thought that because Bagley is still playing, it gives him more of an opportunity to show NBA people that he, not Ayton, should be the number one overall pick. Sadly mistaken on this one. DeAndre Ayton should be the number one overall pick, in particular if it's the Phoenix Suns. So just because Duke's out there still and Ayton's not, it doesn't mean anything to me. Tonight, I am going to find my way to watch Loyola of Chicago against Nevada. One of these two Cinderellas is going to advance to the Elite Eight. What a terrific story. It's the early game, by the way, if you're consuming this before 4 o'clock Arizona time. It's the 4 o'clock this afternoon game is Loyola of Chicago against Nevada. You know, I like watching Gonzaga. I'll watch them tonight, taking on Florida State. Michigan, there's all this conversation about how the Big Ten was going to be impacted by their tournament being played too early. I don't know. That hasn't come true. What's Purdue done? What's Michigan done? Yeah, Michigan State got eliminated, but the Big Ten is still a part of this. And finally, Sean Miller, the statement that he released yesterday, and it wasn't Sean Miller saying, let me write this out. No, that's not how it works. It's some PR person that he's not interested in being the next head coach at Pitt. So I take this a few ways. If you read through the little release that the U of A sent out yesterday, it didn't say, I am the head coach of the Arizona Wildcats. I am not going anywhere. I am out recruiting. I am focused on the 2018-2019 season. It didn't say that. It just said, I'm not interested in being the head coach at Pitt. And that's it. Because he's from back there, and it makes a lot of sense to connect dots. Pitt's program is a train wreck. They lost Jamie Dixon. They bring in Kevin Stallings. He couldn't win a game, so on and so forth. And Bobby Hurley's brother, Danny, leaves Rhode Island, takes the job at Connecticut. Of course, me and my own little way of thinking would love to see a Connecticut-Arizona State basketball game, the Battle of Brothers Hurley, at some point in time. Brian Windhorst is next. We're going to get a deep dive into the Suns. I want to talk in particular about the view of Robert Sarver within the NBA offices in New York City and what he's done to this once proud franchise. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's take a deeper dive now into the Suns. They play at Cleveland tomorrow night. It'll be the Suns and Cavaliers, a Friday weekend. Not a good way for the Suns to continue their losing ways. I wanted to get a deeper dive, though, on what's going on in Phoenix from one of the leading voices across the NBA. Brian Windhorst is with us, ESPN NBA insider. And Brian, just a general overview of the Suns and what you've seen. You've been with ESPN now since 2010. May 27, 2010 was the last time there was a playoff game in Phoenix Suns history. What has gone on out here from your point of view?
Well, they've been unable to take advantage of Phoenix in terms of free agency. The biggest free agent they signed was Tyson Chandler, and a lot of people would think that was a bad signing. They've gone after some major guys. You know, they went after LeBron, for example. They went after LaMarcus Aldridge, and they haven't been able to do it. And their last great run was kicked off by a tremendous free agent signing in Steve Nash, and they have drafted repeatedly, year after year after year in the lottery. And yes, they hit Devin Booker, which was terrific. But generally, they have not been able to hit home runs in the lottery, in the draft. And the combination of those two things has resulted in a team that, quite frankly, does not have much talent on it. Devin Booker is definitely a building block for the future. You get excited about it. But you look at the rest of the team, and you've got kind of some maybes, could-bes, we'll sees. But there's just not a lot of talent there. And especially in the Western Conference, where you have to have a really talented team, the Suns have just not been able to get it done. And it's unfortunate because when the Suns are good, it's good for the NBA. It's a wonderful place to be in the winter during the season. Players like playing there. They have great fans. But they really just haven't done a very good job organizationally. And as a result, you have a team that's stuck in this situation.
What's the view, if you know of, within the league offices about the ownership out here and what they've done to a franchise that Jerry Colangelo had at the top of the heap, that any free agent, when they became available, to at least consider it, to now it's just year after year of competing to have the worst record in the NBA?
Yeah, it's not a hot take to say that Robert Sarver is not very well regarded in the league. And I think if you look at what happened last year, as an example, Blake Griffin completely used the Suns. He used them like, fill in your metaphor. he threatened to go there to squeeze money out of the Clippers. He ended up getting it, never even went to the meeting. That right there is where the Suns have become. You know, again, a decade ago, if the Suns were after you, or if you were in a spot in your senior career where you needed to sort of go and sort of have a renaissance, people were, you know, dragging themselves over each other to get to Phoenix. And they've now become basically just, you know, a something that people will use. And, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge said very nice things. I appreciate that. But ultimately, he used them too. So I think a lot of that comes back to the reputation of the owner. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the head coaching position because, you know, if you want to get a quality coach, the coach has to believe in management. Mm-hmm. He has to believe that the guy who hires him is going to be there. He's got to believe that the owner will have his back. And, you know, the guys who have been hired as coach since Robert Sarver has come there. I mean, Mike D'Antoni was already there, I believe, when mm-hmm. Robert bought the team. But, I mean, since Mike D'Antoni, if I'm wrong about that timeline, they haven't had a good run. And so I think it's going to be a hard sell for a quality coach to trust the organization. And that's just, you know, reaping what you've sown.
We've seen people like Steve Kerr come and go. Rick Welts, one of the leading executives in all the NBA. They go to Golden State. Even Steve Nash has been consulting up there. And not here. There's been some talk of the NBA, and I don't see how they can put this through, that if you can't make a playoff game or playoff team within 10 years, your ownership should come under scrutiny, under question, and the league should be allowed to do something. I think that that's reaching at straws, but maybe there's something to that. I don't know. What's your view?
No, I mean, remember, the owners are that owners. There's 30 of them, and each of them have 1/30th of the league. They're not going to vote. You know, who's going to stick their hand up and say, I'll vote for that provision? Mm-hmm. No. You know. But I will say this. So many things are viewed when they look at how attractive a certain situation is. The talent, the nightlife, the weather, the tax situation. Boy, does Phoenix score high in all of those things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, really, really, when you look at the NBA, the teams that are good historically year over year have wonderful ownership. There's not that many of them.
Right.
It's not like there's 22 of them and Phoenix is on the outs, but ownership sets the agenda for the organization. And in a lot of ways, I would even argue that, you know, if you're a top player who's a free agent, or even if you're a top coach or a top executive, you're not so much choosing a team as much as you're choosing an owner, choosing an organization. And, you know, the Suns have not done well in that standings for a long time.
And to your point, this summer LeBron James is going to be a free agent. He's not even going to give Phoenix a sniff, I wouldn't think.
No, I don't. There's no way that LeBron could trust, frankly, part of his career to the Suns at this point. That he gave him a meeting a couple years ago, but I think that was pretty clear. This was an Eric Bledsoe-related situation. So, you know, the one thing I will say is that if they have one good draft, it could turn things around.
Sure.
And, you know, who knows? They're in position. They're, you know, I would say that they're due to win the lottery, quite frankly. It would have been amazing if they still had that Lakers pick and they could have ended up in this draft with two lottery picks in this draft. Oh, my God. You know, you could have really done it there. Mm-hmm. But obviously they decided to trade that pick. But, you know, you get a little bit of luck in the lottery, it can turn a lot of things around. I think history has shown that as well.
Sure, and Josh Jackson has played better here in recent weeks. He hasn't looked like a top four pick that was passed over to play in the All-Star weekend, which he was. I think it was a very strong statement sent to him to grow up. And Devin Booker has come into his own. You land the top pick this year, conceivably. The ping pong balls go the right way. You suddenly have something in place. That takes us to the coach. Jay Triano likely not to be back. Robert's going to open it up. Ryan McDonough has pitched this idea of the timeline to the fans, which fans have embraced. But all the timeline has done is push back, and put Ryan in a position where he's basically been bulletproof. What do you make out of the coaching situation? What would make sense out here? And the general manager and the job that Ryan McDonough has done.
Well, the one thing that the Suns have done that has really helped them is they brought in James Jones over the last year. James Jones is extremely well respected by players, coaches, and executives. And if you have James Jones involved in the process, that will get you some credibility and get you into the zone with some players that you wouldn't have had. So that was an extremely competent hire, very smart by Robert Sarver and Ryan McDonough to bring him in. I covered him for years in Miami and Cleveland. I have a lot of respect for him. And it was actually surprising to me that James Jones would go to Phoenix, because frankly, I thought that he may have been able to find a job with a different organization. But that was a step in the right direction. And James Jones being a part of the coaching search, which I assume he will be, I think will give them an opportunity to attract candidates that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise.
Before I let you go, let's talk about the game tomorrow night. And that is what is going on with Cleveland this year? And from your view, is this a team that will flip the switch and we will be seeing play in late May and early June?
Well, they've had an incredibly traumatic season. In addition to the loss of their general manager, Phoenix's David Griffin, mm-hmm. which was stunning, to the Kyrie trade, to injuries, to Isaiah Thomas not working out, to all kinds of midseason trades, to their coach having to step away due to health problems, to this week Kyle Korver, one of their respected veterans, stunningly losing his brother, who was only 27 years old. I mean, this season has been incredibly traumatic. I would say that I've never really seen anything quite like it. And not to mention just the little side dramas that we all focus on, like J.R. Smith throwing soup at an assistant coach and stuff like that. So I would not say that this has the makeup of a team that is gearing up for you know, championship success. That said, they do, in my opinion, have the best player. Now, James Harden is having the best season, and he will get my vote for MVP, but I still believe that the Cavs have the best player. And when you have the best player in the game of basketball in a playoff series, it can go a long way. And it is still possible that they can put it together. I wouldn't bet against it. I will say, though, that beyond all the drama that they've had, they are a poor defensive team. Mm. And one of the tried and true statistics is that I think it's for the last 20 years, there has not been a team who has won the championship who is outside the top 12 in defense. That seems to be a magic number. Most have been in the top 10. A few have floated out to the top 12. I think it's back at the Lakers in 2001, I think was the last team that wasn't in that top 12. The Cavs rank, I think, depending on where they fall today or tomorrow, they rank like 27th. Oof. So to me, when their season is over, probably short of a championship, everything that's happened, all that stuff, it'll come down to the fact that they can't stop anybody when it really matters. And I think that's what their ultimate flaw is.
And LeBron won't return to Cleveland? Or what's your guess? You've known him forever.
Nobody, you know, the thing, I always say this, and I know it's a kind of a crude analogy. I would ask you, what are you having for dinner on June 30th?
Right. Don't know.
You don't know the answer because you have a job and you live in a big city. And if you want lobster or steak or chicken or salad, you can have those things. So you don't worry about it today. You maybe worry about it on that day or the day before or something like that. When you're as good as LeBron James, you are in such incredible demand mm-hmm. that probably 28 teams would blow their roster to smithereens to get you, even at age 33. When you have that kind of power and that kind of choice, you don't have to worry about what your next move is going to be. And and the teams themselves, they don't have that luxury. They have to prepare. And we can all see the teams that are preparing, and so we can all take guesses. But when LeBron looks at you and says he's not worrying about it right now, he says that because he has phenomenal power and phenomenal options. And we all should be so lucky to have options like that with our employment.
Good stuff there, Brian. As always, we appreciate the time and insight. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care.
Brian Windhorst there with ESPN NBA Insider. He's been at it for 8 long years now with the Suns doing their thing from out here. Good to get a perspective from someone along those lines. Sports360AZ.com. Again, the Suns play at Cleveland tomorrow night. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. Let's talk ASU football for a couple of minutes. Welcome back. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our football show, Brad Sismat, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona statewide, actually into New Mexico and Las Vegas as well, 16 airings per week. When I saw that the Arizona Cardinals were making moves and the Kevin Mawai signing came down with Arizona State, I said to myself, this is a story here. This is a big time move. And I got about Sam Bradford. I got about Mike Glennon. But Kevin Mawai comes along and signs with the Sun Devils on board with Herm Edwards' staff. We got to talk about this. Kevin Mawai is with us now, part of Herm Edwards' staff at Arizona State University. Terrific career in the National Football League, former LSU Tiger. Kevin, it's Brad Sussmat. How are you?
I'm doing great, Brad. Thanks for having me, man.
And no worries. What brought you to be part of Herm Edwards' staff at ASU, Kevin?
Well, obviously I played for Herm for 5 years in New York, and I've been living here in Scottsdale since this past summer, and I'm trying to get into coaching ranks. I've spent the 2016 season with the Chicago Bears. I've done internships for four different teams during training camp, and with three different training camp internships, multiple mini camp / OTA internships with the NFL, and so I'm trying to break into the ranks in that level, and it didn't work out, and it just so happened that Herm got hired here, and when I saw the news, reached out to him and told him I'd love that opportunity to join his staff and whatever capacity, and the quality control analyst role was open, and after chasing the NFL cycle all the way through the end of the combine or to the combine, decided to come back here and go ahead and start as an analyst and work my way up the ranks with a coach that I know and whom I respect.
That's great. What is it exactly you will be doing for the Sun Devil fans? What is it you'll be doing with ASU?
Well, anything the coaching staff tells me to do. That's basically what the analyst does. You're like the equivalent of a graduate assistant that has a little bit more experience than he does, but no, seriously though, I'll be having a part in helping put together game plan, opponent scouting, analyzing opponent tendencies and things like that, and just giving input to the offensive staff as well as the offensive line coach, working with Dave Christensen and in personnel and evaluations and things like that, on campus recruiting, as an analyst is not allowed to be on the road recruiting, but I'll be able to help in the personnel department with evaluations of prospects and current team players and things like that. So my job is to just facilitate anything and everything that the offensive staff needs to make their jobs on Saturday afternoon a lot easier and more functional.
It's a big-time hire by Herm Edwards, bringing Kevin Mawai in. A great career in the National Football League, now part of Herm Edwards' staff at Arizona State with spring football underway. Pleasure to have Kevin with us on the show. When you talk offensive line and just look at offensive line at the college level, coming from the NFL where you had a terrific career, what is it you want to get across to the young players of today? What's missing, or what do they need more of?
Well, I think the biggest thing is understanding how important fundamentals are, and I think a lot of that gets lost, especially with fans. They don't understand at the higher level, the pro level, the thing that separates the good from the great are guys that have such strong foundation and fundamental techniques that it makes it look, they make the game look easy. And that's what you try to get across to players, is understanding the importance of the fundamentals. And then you build your toolbox, what most coaches like to say, build your repertoire on what you're able to do and understanding your capabilities, but understanding what you're not capable of, and then, finding ways to overcome those deficiencies. So the other part of it is understanding, that you're just a small part of a greater unit. You're only as good as the other four guys that line up next to you. And hopefully, you'll be the leader of that pack and you drive the train. So it's more about selflessness and teamwork and individual technique and foundations than it is about, the look at me mentality. And our goal here is, I know, Mr. Anderson, the AD, his goal is he wants to be a program that builds professional football players and send guys to the NFL. And that's what Herm's mandate has been, is to develop players good enough to play in the league. And so I'm just trying to be a small part of that.
When you look at Herm and you had him as your coach, what do you see at the college level, Herm Edwards, whistle in the mouth, out on practice at spring football? Any difference?
Well, not at all. He's the same coach that I played for back in 2001 to 2005. And he's got a lot of passion, a lot of energy. He's a man of character. And I tell people all the time, the guy that they see in the meeting rooms and the guy that they used to see on TV is the same guy that I played for. He hasn't changed a bit. His attitude's infectious and both for the players and the coaching staff, and so you know, guys want to they want to be a part of it. They want to be a part of somebody that is positive all the time, but all the while understand our greater role is to develop these young players into young men of character and guys that can excel beyond just the football field.
When you were at LSU, who poured into you, and do you look at yourself as, I want to be that guy that poured into me on my college days?
Yeah, I had, in my first 2 years at LSU, I had a coach by the name of Kenny Farrow, who I tell people all the time, he's the greatest offensive line coach that nobody's ever heard of. but he's one of the first coaches that saw in me the ability to play in the NFL and told me so. And I'm very close to him still to this day. And he's always called his players his boys, and I'm one of his boys. So he's the kind of coach that inspired me and the kind of coach I'd love to be like. And then, of course, when I went to the NFL, I had some great coaches as well at my positional group. So my goal is to be just the best possible coach I can be, all the while knowing that my job is to make these kids, men of character and guys that will be proud to say they came from ASU and that they played for Coach Herm Edwards.
Last question before I let you go, and that's along the high school realm of things. I know you're going to be on campus, but if you're talking to a recruit that is seeing this or watching or listening to it, what is it you tell a high school kid who's coming into his own as an offensive lineman that they need to do in high school outside of the obvious, which is take care of your schoolwork and make sure you're a good teammate? What are some other things you would pass on? You made it all the way to the top. Now you're coaching at Arizona State. So a little bit of advice for the younger players.
Well, I think so much now, everybody in the high school levels in all sports are geared towards that one sport mentality. But I would say, enjoy the high school life. Enjoy playing on Friday nights. It's special. If your goal is to play at the next level, know that it takes more than just the casual workout and the casual mentality about it. It's an all-in mentality, and that means how you carry yourself in the classroom, off the field, on the field, mm-hmm. in the weight room, around your teammates and all of that, and especially from a recruiting standpoint. Coaches look at character just as much, if not more so, as they do ability. And it's great to have guys that are five stars and the best in the business, but if they're a kid that has questionable character, then you got to question whether or not you want to bring that kind of a kid into your program. So that's a big part of it. What kind of citizen are you in your school and in your community? But the other part of it is too, you got to understand that you might be the number one recruit in the country, but there's a bunch of other players on this roster already that are really good players too. So, nothing's going to be handed to you. You come in, you compete with the opportunity to play and you have to find a way to distance yourself from the rest of your pack to make you stand out. So those are things I would say. And then, of course, for here, particularly for ASU, understand how great of a university this is. And from that standpoint, I can speak to that. I'm a parent of a recruited student athlete who signed here for the 2018 class. And I fell in love with the university well before Herm's name was even whispered amongst the ranks. So we were here and committed as a family, as an ASU Sun Devil family, prior to me even being hired here. Know that the school you're going to is somewhere you might end up being for the next 4 or 5 years of your life, and make sure it's somewhere that you know you can excel at beyond just the football field or the athletics.
Good stuff there, Kevin, and we appreciate the time and the visit. We'll see you out on the practice field. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks for having me, and y'all take care. Have a great day.
It's Kevin Mawai with us for a couple of minutes, sports360az.com. What a great hire by Herm Edwards. You have guys like that pouring into your offensive line, which has been a spot of weakness, quite frankly, through the years. And the ability to recruit big-time offensive linemen and to have someone come in with a 16-year NFL career, that's great. We're back with more after this timeout. And now, because you know pretty much all that's going on in the world of sports, Johnny Manziel worked out this morning and the Cardinals weren't there. Now you do know everything going on in the world of sports. It's time for Bill Goodykins, Goody at the Movies. Hi, Bill.
Hey, I was going to say, what do you mean, pretty much? I mean, if we can't turn to you for everything, what
is the point? Why watch? Yeah. Why listen? It's kind of like you, chief film critic for Gannett and AZ Central. I mean, it's kind of like you. You have three movies that, look, every week I bring you on, I never read your reviews intentionally because then it's no
that's
fun.
That's great.
But then I'll read them afterwards. I don't read them. Okay. I don't read them before. I don't read them before. Let me explain myself here. I think I just dug a hole. I read your stuff, but I read it afterwards for more depth, right? But I just happened to swing by Death of Stalin, and I'll get to that in a minute. We have a very random collection of movies to see this week. So let's start with the one that just looks the worst, and that is Pacific Rim. Am I right or wrong on this?
You are right. It's not only the worst, it's also the biggest and the loudest and the, you know, and the dumbest. But you know, I feel like you probably had to expect that going in. Actually, I should say the first one wasn't bad. Guillermo del Toro directed it, and Idris Elba was the star, and they both kind of made it more than more than just kind of a Transformers type movie. But both of those guys are gone for this one, and their absence is sorely missed. You know, they need to be there.
So avoid at all costs. That's what you're saying without saying. Or you can go ahead and say it if you want.
No, I'll say it. Yeah, I don't have any problems. No, the one thing there is one thing that has John Boyega, who is he's in the Star Wars movies, the new version of the Star Wars movies, and not the Star Wars side movies, but the actual main Star Wars movie. But and he is the converted stormtrooper who becomes a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
He is in this. And he's pretty good, and he kind of makes it fun. And I will say this for this movie, because, you know, when I was going to I have a lot of screenings and stuff, and I was going to the screening, and I always need to look at the running time because I need to know, you know, is the grocery store going to be open when I get done and all this stuff. And I saw that this movie was less than 2 hours long, and I just thought that I like.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm right there with you. If it says something like 89 minutes. Or 189 minutes, or what, you know, whatever. I'm just gone. Right? I mean, if it's 89, I'm good. If it's 189, I'm not. It's not happening. So
then I'm sad.
Yeah. All right. So let's move off Pacific Rim. So you come up with this one that I read a little bit about, Death of Stalin, and so on the surface, I see the title Death of Stalin. And then I read what you're writing about this, and it has humor in it.
It's hilarious. Okay. It's hilarious. It's what it is. But it is really about the death of Stalin. What it's made by Armando Iannucci, who created the show Veep.
Yeah.
And his other stuff is like the Thick of It and In the Cut, and these just like scathing, brutal but hilarious political satires. And what he's done that here, but it's based on a lot of real stuff, like, you know, the Stalin's Soviet Union was so paranoid that, for instance, and this happened in real life, and it happens in the movie. He has a stroke, and he's just lying there. He's catatonic. He's unresponsive, but he's not dead. And it takes him 12 hours to get him a doctor because they've either killed or shipped all the real doctors off to Siberia because they were afraid that they might try to poison him. And I mean, the whole thing is just ludicrous like that, and it's just, but it's really funny. And he's got a great bunch of actors, and they Steve Buscemi plays the crew chef, who doesn't seem like, you know, your ideal crew chef actor, but he's fantastic. And it's really funny. But the thing that they do is they never ever lose the thread that there's real brutal, you know, murder going on here. I mean, They Stalin killed millions, and they never lose the sight of that. And that's what the thing that Iannucci is so good at is sort of balancing those two things. It's really good.
Mm. And it looks good from the trailer. I mean, it looks so laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also, you know, it's not that they're like these really serious parts. It's just that the whole underlying story is so serious. That they just, and he is just a master at doing that. I mean, you know, taking these serious things, and in this case, often deadly serious, and just making it hilarious.
All right, now let's finish with this last one. So the title is Unsane, and this has been shot on an iPhone. Now, there's been stuff that's been shot on iPhones before. I'm not thinking that that is that uncommon. But for it to make it to the big screen and to get reviews about it, that seems to me to be uncommon. This is not just something that you'd find on YouTube, right?
That's correct. The other, not this big a release, but the other major release was the movie Tangerine, which he did the Florida project later. But the Florida project he didn't use half lens. I mean, he used real cameras and stuff. This is Steven Soderbergh. I mean, he's big time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he uses iPhones. And the thing that's interesting about this, like in Tangerine, unless you really knew it, you probably wouldn't, you know, if somebody didn't point it out to you, you might not know that they had done that on iPhones. You can tell on this a lot of the times, and he doesn't make any attempt to hide it, but this is a horror story about a woman who is, you know, sort of tricked into committing herself into a psychiatric ward, mostly for insurance reasons, because they want to keep her for 7 days because her insurance will pay for 7 days of it. But it is a real horror movie, and they don't really try to hide the fact that they're on these iPhones, and it gives it this sort of off-kilter immediacy that's really effective. And I thought it was good. The story kind of falls apart. What it is you don't know she has a stalker, and the stalker works in the hospital where they commit her.
Mm.
But she doesn't know if he does. Is he really there, or is it her imagination? You know, and the problem with the movie is they answer that question far too quickly. But it's really interesting. And I have to say this, in the jerk move of all time, I went to see this movie on Monday night, and the publicist, as you know, they'll often stick around afterwards and ask what you thought about the movie.
Right.
And I walked out, and she said, "What'd you think?" I said, "Oh, I liked it." I said, "He shot it on iPhones, right?" And she said, "Yeah, I think so." And I said, "Actually, yeah, he did. Steven Spielberg told me." and that was the truth. And I thought, I'm never going to be able to drop a name like that again.
No, you
sound like as big a jerk. So I had to do it. I had to take the advantage there.
I was going to ask you about that, so we'll dive out of that because I'll finish with this. You did talk to Spielberg last week, right? I saw that on your social. What was that for? When Steven Spielberg calls the house, how does that work?
Steven Spielberg, a lot of these people are really down to earth. Like Matt Damon will just call you up, you know, and they doesn't use a publicist. Steven Spielberg, you go through a lot of different people, and there's a whole team of them. But what was cool about him was, and it's for Ready Player One, although we talked about everything, we were supposed to have 20 minutes, but he gave me quite a bit of extra time. One, maybe, I don't know if it's because he lived in Phoenix for a long time, but he had some sort of phone problem, like his phone cut out. Like he drove up to his house, and he walked into his house, and somehow in walking in, it kind of cut his phone out. So he called back, and he gave me some extra time. He's very friendly, and he's very chatty, and that is a guy who knows a thing or two about movies.
Yeah, sure.
He's seen a couple, and he's made a couple, but he's very down to earth. He'll talk about any of them. He's not, you know. I talked to him once before, and the thing that I've liked about him was he's not humble, but he's not arrogant. He doesn't pretend that he's not Steven Spielberg. I mean, he doesn't pretend like he can't make whatever movie he wants to make.
Mm-hmm.
So he just kind of starts with that, and I like that. I'm saying, you know, sometimes you'll see athletes like that, like they don't pretend. There's this false modesty among some people, but I kind of like the ones that are just kind of like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm pretty good at this.
No.
and then you can start your conversation at a completely different place, you know?
No, that's good. That's good. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
All righty.
Bill Goody Kuntz, Goody at the Movies. Always good to catch up with Bill. Tara Pinkley produced today. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. If you missed any part of today's show, it repeats over and over and over. Head over to our website. There's plenty of content there you can check out at sports360az.com. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sussman at Football AZ. We're working on another TV show I'll tell you about next week that'll be pretty cool too. Thanks for being with us.